Hello, it's Thursday the 26th of May and welcome to Korea 24. I'm your host, Kwon Jang-woo. The Bank of Korea has raised its key interest rate by a quarter of a percentage point for the second consecutive month in a move to contain rising inflationary pressure. We'll have more details in our news briefing shortly. With less than a week to go until the local elections and parliamentary by-elections, we speak to representatives from the two main political parties in a special Korean Politics Digest today. And then on Explore Korea, we find out about an exhibition in Seoul that features works from three generations of artists from the same family. We have all that and more on today's Korea 24. South Korea's central bank raised key rates by a quarter percentage point on Thursday in a bid to tackle inflation. This is the second rate hike in 2 months, and officials hinted that additional hikes will be coming soon as well. Our KBS World Radio news editor, Koo Hee-jin, joins us now in the studio to give us some more details of this latest fiscal measure, as well as our other headlines of the day. Hee-jin, hello, it's good to see you.
Hello, Jang-woo.
So this is the second hike in as many months, and it is the first time in nearly 15 years that the central bank has raised rates back-to-back. How did they explain the decision?
Well, the Bank of Korea's Monetary Policy Board convened a meeting and raised the policy rate by 25 basis points to 1.75%. This is the central bank's fifth rate hike since August last year, amounting to a combined 1.25 percentage points of hikes. The move is widely regarded as a measure to deal with soaring consumer prices and the US Federal Reserve's hawkish monetary policy. In April, consumer prices spiked 4.8% from a year earlier, the fastest on-year gain since October 2008, while the Fed also raised its key rates by half a percentage point to a target range of between 0.75% and 1%. Now, BOK Governor Lee Chang-yong also hinted that additional rate hikes were possible, saying that the bank's monetary policy will focus on tackling inflationary pressure in the months ahead, as consumer prices will likely top 5%. Still, he stopped short of pegging down a timing for the next hike, adding that it would hinge upon the nation's consumer price growth in May, as well as the Fed's measures.
Yes, and reflecting such concerns, the central bank raised this outlook for the nation's inflation rate for this year to 4.5%, which would be the nation's strongest inflation surge in nearly 14 years. Can you break it down for us?
Well, the figure disclosed on Thursday is 1.4 percentage points higher than the bank's initial outlook released in February. The central bank also lowered its outlook for Korea's economic growth to 2.7% this year, down 0.3 percentage points. If the inflation rate does indeed hit 4.5%, it would be the nation's highest since 2008. The adjusted outlook comes after consumer prices saw growth of nearly 5% in April compared to the same period last year. Prices of raw materials and grain also saw a drastic rise following Russia's invasion of Ukraine and disruptions in global supply chains.
Turning our attention next to labour issues, the Supreme Court on Thursday upheld a lower court ruling on the peak wage system. This system gradually reduces the salaries of senior workers as they reach their retirement. This ruling is welcome news for labour groups. Can you tell us more about the court's ruling?
Yes, the top court stated on Thursday that slashing wages only because of one's age is a violation of senior employment laws. The first ruling of this kind comes after a retiree from a local research institute filed the lawsuit demanding reimbursement of his lost wages before retirement in 2014. The institute adopted the system for employees over the age of 55 in January 2009 after reaching an agreement with the labor union. The system was designed to cut salaries of senior employees in order to create more jobs for new intake amid the high youth unemployment rate. Labour groups welcomed the ruling, calling the verdict an inevitable outcome. The Federation of Korean Trade Unions and the Korean Confederation of Trade Unions on Thursday slammed the government, noting that it had largely failed in yielding more hires and instead prompted a decline in wages. Employers, on the other hand, expressed regret over the decision. The ruling is likely to trigger other lawsuits and related labour management negotiations.
Moving on, President Yoon Suk-yeol has nominated Seoul National University professor Park Sun-ae as his education minister and former lawmaker Kim Sung-hee as health minister on Thursday. This is, of course, after the former nominees for those positions stepped down following allegations of ethical lapses. So what can you tell us about the two new nominees?
Well, Yoon's latest picks are women, perhaps as a response to criticism that his cabinet was male-dominated. The top office said Park, who is a professor at SNU's Graduate School of Public Administration, fully understands the Yoon government's philosophy on state affairs, having served on the presidential transition team. Regarding the health minister nominee, the top office said Kim is an expert in the health and medical field, noting that she previously served as food and drug safety minister. Yoon also nominated Oh Yoo-kyung, also a woman and dean of SNU's College of Pharmacy, as chief of the Ministry for Food and Drug Safety, a vice ministerial position. If Park and Kim are appointed following a parliamentary confirmation hearings, the total for women on Yoon's cabinet will reach 5, accounting for about 30% of the cabinet.
Now on to the elections. With less than a week until the June 1st local and parliamentary by-elections, a new KBS poll finds that candidates of rival parties for a parliamentary seat in Incheon, which includes the former presidential candidate Lee Jae-myung, are in a race that's too close to call. Can you give us more details?
Well, according to the latest KBS poll of eligible voters in the relevant electoral districts, 42.5% of the respondents favour Lee Jae-myung, former presidential candidate for the main opposition Democratic Party, while 42.7% support Yoon Young-sun of the ruling People Power Party. The gap of 0.2 percentage points was within the margin of error. In the race for the parliamentary seat representing Bundang A district of Seongnam, south of Seoul, An Cheol-soo of the PPP holds a comfortable lead against Kim Byung-won of the DP with 56.1% to 28.2%. The approval rating for the ruling party was the largest among political parties in both the electoral districts. The poll conducted by Hanguk Research on Monday and Tuesday has a confidence level of 95% with a margin of error of plus or minus 3.5 percentage points. And early voting for the June 1st elections will take place Friday and Saturday, that's tomorrow and the day after, at some 3,550 polling stations nationwide.
Let's end with a quick update on the pandemic situation. Daily new COVID-19 cases in South Korea fell to the 10,000 range. Can you tell us more?
Well, the Korea Disease Control and Prevention Agency on Thursday reported 18,816 new cases, bringing the cumulative caseload to 18,036,720. It marks the first time in 17 weeks that the Thursday tally dipped below 20,000. The number of patients in critical care rose by 6 from a day ago to 243. 34 additional deaths were reported, bringing the death toll to 24,063, with the fatality rate unchanged at 0.13%.
That's all for our news briefing today. Thank you for bringing us those updates.
Thank you.
There is less than a week to go until the June 1st local elections and parliamentary by-elections. Coming less than 3 months after the presidential elections, the momentum seems to be with the ruling People Power Party, and the main opposition Democratic Party seems to be struggling in the polls despite some high-profile candidates. In a special Korean Politics Digest today, we thought we'd connect with representatives from the two main parties to see how they are looking to win over voters in this final stretch. We'll connect with a representative from the DP later. But first, we have joining us on the line now former lawmaker Lee Jae-young, who is now the director of social media at the election camp of Seoul Mayor Oh Se-hoon of the PPP. Mr. Lee, hello. It's good to have you on the show today.
Thank you for having me.
Mr. Lee, I understand that we are actually connecting with you while you are out on the campaign trail at the moment. So we very much appreciate you making the time to speak to us today.
No problem. Thank you.
This is the first time we're speaking to you since before the presidential election in March. So although it has been a while, can we maybe just start with your reaction to President Yoon's election win? And what do you think it meant for you and the party to win?
Well, simple answer to that question is I'm very happy that we won. I think the margin was a little bit too close, but the result is good. We are very happy about it. And the fact that the current government, the Yoon government, although it started with a bit of low approval rate before he actually took into office, but ever since then, his approval rate has been increasing, which shows that people had made right choice. And once we put him in the place to do actual work that he has been performing. So we're very happy about the result and what he has been showing thus far, although it's been short.
Sure. Congratulations on your party's candidate winning. Let's look to next week's election then. It is an election that has come up less than 3 months after the presidential election, as we mentioned, and less than a month since President Yoon took office. What do you think is the significance of these elections then? What is on the line for the PPP?
Well, I think it's a bit of an extension of what we've been saying over the past almost year since the special election we had in last year's April, when we had the special election for Seoul mayor's position. We won at the time, and this past election for presidential election really set the stage and the backdrop for coming June 1st election, where we've been saying that once we win these elections, then we obviously going to win the minds of people, the voters. And because, like I said before, the Yoon office has been showing his competency, that I think it'll have a positive effect on the June 1st. And once we do, especially in places like Seoul, where it's been mostly the Minju Party for past 10 years, then I think we can try something really new and something that Oh Se-hoon, the mayor, if he becomes a mayor again, he might be able to do something very exciting moving Seoul forward into the future.
What is the message that you're putting forward to the voters? How has the party been appealing to the voters?
Well, I think we've been sending various messages. First is that we really want to work, we've seen what Minju has been doing, Minju Party has been doing past 10 years. Again, they didn't deliver what they promised in terms of policies, in terms of infrastructure, in terms of what the everyday life has been for the various people. And we want to say that, you know, once you give us the chance, we will actually deliver. We're not just going to have it empty hollow. What we say, we will deliver. That's been our, I think, main message. But at the same time, I think because we have the new central government, that we need these municipalities in line with central government policy moving forward. So I think it is very easy to deliver those promises on various points once we have the central government and the municipality in line in terms of, you know, ideology, in terms of in all directions.
The momentum seems to be with your party at the moment, as I mentioned. You are well ahead in the polls for this whole mayoral race with your candidate, Oh Se-hoon. The polls are also particularly close in the Gyeonggi province governor's race and the parliamentary by-election for the Gaeangbi district in Incheon, where the former DP presidential candidate Lee Jae-myung is running. The DP were expected to win both comfortably at first, but the race has become very close now. Why do you think that is? And how optimistic are you about the results in those two races and elsewhere going your way?
Well, I myself, and I think a lot of people are very surprised what had happened over the past about 3 weeks to a month. Like you said, although we didn't expect, I mean, at least on the polls, we were going to lose. But I think we have come to close enough, or we closed the gap enough where we are becoming hopeful to win in those two places, because simply Minju Party's campaign slogans are completely off the mark. I believe they've nominated wrong people, candidates for those two places, as well as other places where it's not making the news. But a lot of candidates, we feel that the PPP have, we have put better people in the place as a candidate. And again, although parliament is not part of this campaign, we've been seeing over the past, again, several weeks, ever since the last presidential election, where Minju Party show that they're not willing to accept the fact that they lost the election, and a lot of policies or law passing or the messages they've been sending is that, you know, they're not willing to cooperate with the new government, which I don't think it translates, you know, well with the people in general. So I think people are willing to punish them.
Mm. What factors do you think you need to watch out for in the final few days that you have left now? And what message do you have to the voters as well?
Well, I think although we are, you know, ahead of, you know, polls, in, you know, ahead of Minju in various polls that you've mentioned, election is election. You need to really work hard and not make any stupid mistakes in between. 7 days, although it's not only 7 days, but at the same time, you know, it's long enough where people can change their minds. So I think we need to be consistent in terms of our message. We need to be careful in terms of not making stupid mistakes, I said before. And hopefully, Minju Party also doesn't do something that is drastically, well, I don't have any hope for them, not that I'm making any, you know, strategy for them. But I think if we stay on course, I think it's going to be okay.
Hopefully. Okay, well, good luck on the final stretch, Mr. Yi, and thank you once again for your time.
Thank you. I'm sorry I'm speaking from outside. I got a lot of people around and I've been a little bit distracted, but thank you for having me again.
We very much appreciate it. That was Lee Jae-young, the director of social media at Seoul Mayor Oh Se-hoon's election camp. We are going to carry on now and meet a representative from the main opposition Democratic Party. We connect with Dr. Choi Ji-eun, chairwoman of Busan's Puk Gangsa B district for the DP. Dr. Chair, thank you for speaking to us today.
Thank you for inviting me.
We just spoke to Lee Jae-young from the ruling People Power Party, Dr. Chair, and I commented how this was the first time that we are speaking to you both after the presidential elections. First, what was your reaction to your candidate's loss in March, and how has the Democratic Party been dealing with it since?
Well, it was a really close race. As you remember, we lost only by 0.73% of gap with the current president, which is the smallest margin ever in Korean presidential election history. So we are very sad, of course, and also it's a pity that all the plans and the visions and the policy pledges we promised with the citizens, we cannot really have opportunity to implement, so that's a real pity. However, I think we should accept what people think about the Democratic Party and then the previous Moon Jae-in administrations. There are good things we have done, but there are also not very successful policies such as real estate policy, etc., that we actually were very highly criticized. So I think this is time for us to reflect and then see what are those, what are the lessons we should draw, and then also try to reform the party and also upgrade the our capability, and then show the newer and then the better ourselves to the citizen.
You say you need a time to reflect, but right away we have these June 1st local elections and parliamentary by-elections coming up. How important are these elections to the DP, especially considering the loss in the presidential elections? What is on the line?
I mean, this election is, of course, important than any other election because it will pave the way for the next 4 years in all administration in different provinces and major cities, and also democratic grassroots such as a mayor elections and also city council elections all this time. So this is really important for people like myself. It's preparing for the upcoming the parliamentary election in 2 years, because the government, the city mayor or the city councils are closely linked to the next election, because they are preparing for the local policies, and also they are the direct counterpart with the local, the residents and citizens. So, of course, like any election, we don't want to lose it. But it is true that we are facing very tough turmoil as a new administration just start. And like typically Korean citizens want to support the start of a new administration, whoever, whichever party took the power. So the citizens are showing the strong support for the current ruling party. And the opposition party, we right after the defeat of the big presidential election, we didn't really have time to overcome or upgrade ourselves.
Sure.
And then we are faced with a big turmoil of going through this election. So this is actually a very tough time for us.
Sure, it's a challenging situation. How has the party been appealing to the voters? What has the message been that you have been telling them?
Well, I think the party, if we see only the like Bidewi, or the current leadership of the party, trying to give a message that we actually are really taking all the criticism seriously, and then we apologize what we have done before if there's anything we were not good enough. And also we recruited a lot of new and younger candidates. It's a new politician for this local election. And also we appointed a new and a very young female politician in 20s, Park Ji-yeon, as our party leader. So that's a historical record that the youngest female party leader of Korean political history. So we took all the risk to appoint a very young person to and allow her to share her voice about all the issues. And then we really significantly increased the number, the proportion of the candidate of youth and also female candidate for this local election. So I think those are the messages that our party leadership tried to give. Mm. But at the same time, there are also a lot of chaos even within the party. Also, there are a lot of unbalanced opinion. And at the same time, I think we are doing a very bad job in providing new vision or agenda for how to reform the party or how to reform the politics. But more importantly, what if we take the seat in this local election? What are the party proposed to do? I think this particular election, the party is doing very weak job in providing visions or the policy pledges with the residents. And I think this is a real pity.
Why do you think that is? You mentioned Park Ji-hyun. She gave a press conference the other day, but even lawmakers from within the DP have criticised that press conference where she apologised for the party and representing the party. Why are the DP, do you think, are struggling to form a coherent message?
Well, I think it's not about her, like, one individual problem. I think she's actually very brave, and then a lot of her message is actually correct. And I support a lot of her messages, but bigger problem is the party itself. I mean, the party—it was the party who appointed the new politician who entered into politics maybe just 10 days ago as the party leader, because we lost the election, and then she seemed to be gaining the popularity. But I think the party leadership has a bigger role than gaining popularity among a small representative, portion of a population, such as a relatively young woman. Of course, their voice is very important, but party leaders also have some strategy for the upcoming election, or the policy pledges, or the vision for how to lead the Korea, the country. Even though we are opposition party, we still have the majority of the seat in the parliament, and we can actually pass a lot of law and then make a lot of reforms. So I think the party leader need some more leadership and also the vision, and need to be more prepared. But it's the party who appointed her almost like event or show.
Sure.
And I think she is great, and she's capable of doing many things, but I think the party took a lot of risk on her.
Right.
Her reputation as well. So I think this, what is going on in Democratic Party is really just showing that we are not really ready we are not really prepared for this particular election this time.
Right. So, as you said, it's going to be a very challenging situation. Very briefly, Dr. Chair, what is your final message to the voters out there?
Well, although the Democratic Party seems to be very chaos today, you will see a lot of candidates who are running in your district or in your city are very capable of doing a lot of things, and they probably have a credential and good experience than the other candidates. So this particular time, I really suggest you to focusing on the individual candidate instead of the popularity of the party.
We'll leave it there. We've been speaking to Dr. Choi Ji-eun, chairwoman of Busan's Puk Kangsa B District for the Democratic Party. Thank you for speaking to us today.
Thank you.
Welcome to the Korea 24 Stock and Forex Update.
The benchmark Korea Composite Stock Price Index dropped 4.77 points, or 0.18% on Thursday, closing the day at 2,612.45. The tech-heavy KOSDAQ also fell, losing 1.26 points, or 0.14%, to close at 871.43. On the foreign exchange, the local currency weakened 2.41 against the dollar, ending the day at 1,267.1.
You can check Korean stock and forex closings at world.kbs.co.kr.
We continue on now to Korea Trending, our daily segment looking at some of the other news stories that have been trending online today. And for that, we have Jenny Sa joining us in the studio. Jenny, hello. It's good to see you.
Good to see you.
We dive right into our stories today. So, Jenny, what do you have for us first?
The Supreme Court on Thursday upheld an 18-month jail sentence for the former K-pop group Big Bang member, Seungri, who was indicted for arranging prostitution services and overseas gambling, among other charges. The top court, however, overturned the fine of 1.15 billion won, which is around $900,000, for illegally obtaining gambling funds.
I see. So the 18-month sentence has now been finalized, but the fine has been overturned. Can you give us a brief reminder of his charges?
Yes. Seungri, whose legal name is Lee Seung-hyun, was indicted in January 2020 on 9 charges, including habitual gambling, misappropriation of funds, and facilitating prostitutes for overseas investors. And in March of the same year, he enlisted in the military and was tried in a military court.
Right, so he was tried in the military court initially. Can you walk us through the lower court decisions and tell us how he got here as well?
Yes. He initially received a 3-year prison sentence in August 2021 and was put in a military prison following the initial trial. He was also ordered to pay a fine of the previously mentioned 1.15 billion won for the amount of illegally obtained funds used on casino chips. And he appealed the decision on the grounds that the punishment was too heavy, and a higher military court agreed, reducing the sentence to 1.5 years. The Supreme Court upheld this decision. The top court only considered the habitual gambling and violation of foreign currency exchange in its review and overturned a fine, citing that gambling chips can only be used in casinos and its monetary equivalent cannot be subject to collection. And the former K-pop star will be transferred to a correctional facility to serve the remainder of his sentence until his release in February 2023.
Right, so that means he has only about half of his 18-month sentence left now to serve. Mm-hmm. The question will be, what will happen to him after then? What will he do? We will have to see. Okay, let's move on to our next story. What do you have for us?
The game between South Korea and the Brazilian men's national soccer teams drew in a record number of fans to one of South Korea's biggest online ticketing platforms on Wednesday. The Taeguk Warriors, led by head coach Paulo Bento, will be hosting Brazil at the Seoul World Cup Stadium next Thursday in a friendly match. According to the Korea Football Association, 740,000 users accessed the reservation site to get their tickets for the game, logging the largest number of users since the birth of the site.
Wow, 740,000 people all trying to buy tickets at the same time. Mm-hmm. That is perhaps understandable considering that it is Brazil, and they're also the top team in the world at the moment, right?
Yes, that is right. This match has the national team, who is currently 29th in the men's FIFA world rankings, going against the number one team, 5 months ahead of the 2022 World Cup in Qatar. And it also provides a rare opportunity for Korean soccer fans to see Son Heung-min, the top scorer in the English Premier League, go head-to-head with Paris Saint-Germain FC superstar Neymar.
Yes, it'll be a good test for the South Korean team. With so many people flocking to the site at once, though, were there any issues with the site?
Yes, the KFA did increase the maximum number of people entering the reservation page at once from 100,000 to 320,000 before tickets went on sale. However, despite the preparation on KFA's part, slow loading between pages and of the ticket payment window was unavoidable with the heavy traffic. Regarding the ticketing for the Taeguk Warriors' next match against Chile, which is set to open on Friday, the KFA stated that they are taking measures so that fans do not experience difficulties in purchasing tickets.
Well, at least the website didn't crash entirely. Mm. The mood is really good at the moment when it comes to the national team, and I think tickets for all the upcoming international friendlies in Korea will be popular. But the Brazil game, I think, will be really special. That will be taking place next week, Thursday at 8 p.m. Korea time. Let's move on to our final trending story. What else do you have for us today?
The National Museum of Korea will be holding a concert on Saturday to raise awareness for a greener earth and to celebrate the heroes of the COVID-19 pandemic. The NMK and the National Museum Foundation of Korea will be jointly hosting the concert as part of a free performance series called The Museum's Cultural Feast. It has been held annually since 2014, and this year's series will span from May to October on both indoor and outdoor stages at the museum.
Okay, so tell us more about this free concert series then.
Yes, for the past 2 years, Museum's Cultural Feast has been held online in accordance with social distancing guidelines. But this year's performances, including the first one of the year on Saturday, will be held both online and offline. And Saturday's concert is also the first in the Thank You-themed series, which aims to express gratitude to medical workers, firefighters, and police officers, among others, and raise environmental awareness.
So you mentioned the Thank You series. I understand there are two more themes. Can you tell us about the others?
Yes, this year's shows consist of three different sets of concerts, each with distinct themes. And aside from the thank you concerts mentioned earlier, another series will consist of a group of indoor performances of classical music and jazz held at noon during the peak summer months of July and August, providing a shelter from the heat for the audience. And the third series will work together with national cultural institutions to put on a performance that matches the season at the time.
Right, and I believe you don't even need to reserve tickets for these concerts. You just have to turn up at the National Museum of Korea. But do check the website just in case. Mm-hmm. That's all the time we have for today's Korea Trending. Thank you for bringing us those stories, Jenny, and we will talk to you again next time.
See you next time.
We've now come to Explore Korea, our weekly segment discovering more about some of Korea's cultural, historical and travel highlights. And we do that with our panel of special contributors, or explorers, shall we say. This week, our arts explorer, An Jae-woo, has joined us once again. Jae-woo, hello. It's good to see you.
Likewise, Jang-woo.
Okay, so what are we talking about today?
Okay, so Jang-woo, today I'm making my second appearance in this year's May, right?
Mm.
And as I said during my first appearance, the month of May in Korea has a special nickname, 가정의 달, which literally means family month. It's the month we recognize and celebrate the wonders of family affection and bonding, including a few special family-themed days as well. For instance, May 5th, which is Children's Day, May 8th, which is Parents' Day, and May 21st, which was last Saturday this year.
Mm.
In Korean, it's 부부의날, Married Couples Day.
Huh, okay.
Now, I have a question for you. Do you know why May 21st is 부부의날?
I'm not sure. Why?
So, this is really cute, actually. So, we're in the month of May, family month, right? And on the 21st of this month, think about that combination, that number 21. It's a combination of 2 and 1, right?
Right.
It's the day we celebrate 2 becoming 1.
Okay.
There
you go, right?
So, yeah. So, with all that in mind, it was a no-brainer for me to decide to talk about this couple slash family of artists for this week's Explore Korea, husband and wife painters Chun Byung-gun and Han Jin-soo. That's right, the late great Chun Byung-gun and his wife Han Jin-soo, and their daughter Chun Dong-ok and Chun Dong-ok's daughter Kim Hyun-ji. There's a Korean saying that I have to share at this moment that goes, 피는 못 속여, which literally means you cannot fool one's blood, right?
Mm.
So, yeah, that art DNA is running really strong in this family here, right? Well, so we're going to talk about these four artists. And in addition, recently a very special art exhibition opened exhibiting the works of all four of these sensational artists. I will indeed share the details today as well.
Yes, I find this absolutely fascinating. An exhibition showcasing the works from three generations of artists, all from the same family.
Yes.
It sounds very special indeed. Let's start with the first generation then, Chun Byung-gun and Han Jin-soo. What can you tell us about them?
Sure. So let's begin with the late great Chun Byung-gun. He was born in 1928 and passed away in 1987. The three key points at which I believe must be included in a proper discussion on Chun Byung-gun's oeuvre are A, versatility in terms of movement, B, Christianity, and C, Korean identity. Now let's start with A, versatility in terms of movement. Now, Chang-woo, it will be criminal to categorize Chun Byung-gun's craft under a single movement of art, as his brushwork explored a number of different styles, including surrealism, abstractionism, figurative painting, post-impressionism, and expressionism. Furthermore, a healthy number of his works are combinations of at least two different movements. For instance, an abstract painting which has surrealist elements, as if it's a collage of fragments from two different paintings or more. And what's important to highlight here is that it wasn't merely an experiment. The works have immense aesthetic value. Chun Byung-gun figured out how to make artistic sense out of it, how to please and inspire the appreciator in a highly creative and profound fashion.
I see. So he was someone who wasn't constrained by boundaries,
not at
always
all.
Challenging conventions.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. So what about the other two points that you mentioned, Christianity and Korean identity?
Okay, sure. So, to begin with, his father was a pastor, and this had a significant impact on his life and work. A number of popular biblical topics are represented in many of his works, especially his earlier ones, the ones in the 50s. However, a crucial difference between these works and those of the Occident, which discuss the identical topics, is that they are very Korean as well. Which brings us to the third point, Korean identity. Now, for example, while his 1953 piece Mercy, or in Korean, 자비, is his version of Pietà, there are a few non-Occidental elements in this painting, making the work that much more unique, such as having the Virgin Mary dressed in the traditional Korean hanbok attire and having a representation of traditional Korean architecture in the background of the painting.
Right.
So that alone already has a lot of significance. But on top of that, let's talk about a little bit of the situation of Christianity in Korea's 1950s, right? Especially this year, 1953. What happened in 1953? It was the end of the Korean War, right?
Sure.
South Korea, obviously so devastated. And when you're in that kind of a situation, I think, so who's going to save us? Where can we find hope? And in that sense, this religion, which is relatively new to the Korean history and culture, which came from the other side of the world, of course, the West. And of course, military-wise, we also understand that the war came to an end with, of course, the aid of the U.S. Armed Forces. So with all that in mind, I think for an artist like Chun Byung-gun, number one, he noticed that there was a very strong social desire for recovery. And therefore, maybe he might have asked himself, what is the mission, if not social obligation, of an artist in these particular times, right? So maybe he was trying to provide a sense of hope himself to the people through his art. Maybe that was his mission given from God and as interpreted by his religious beliefs, right? And another thing is, I think what was really important for a visual artist at this time was the vast introduction of American culture to Korea. So you see all these different elements, for example, religion and music and art and all these different things, attire as well. In that sense, how do we continuously preserve, appreciate, and celebrate original Korean values and cultural traits? What if I kind of just fuse all that into this incoming new flow of culture? And I think that was very, very well represented in his works of this time.
I see. So exploring ideas about Christianity, but always with a Korean twist, always with Korea in mind as well.
Exactly. And audience. Therefore, he's not just being another one of them, so to speak, but he's being himself.
We have to move on. What about his wife, Han Jin-soo?
Sure. Han Jin-soo was born in 1927. In July, she'll be celebrating her 95th birthday.
And so she's still alive then?
Yes.
Wow.
She's
95.
Doing pretty well, as a matter of fact. Wow. Yes. So congratulations to her and the entire family. In terms of movement slash style, unlike her husband who exercised multiple movements, she's been focusing on representing the Korean people with mainly a post-impressionist spirit. In other words, if you are a fan of Vincent van Gogh or Paul Cézanne, I have all the confidence in the world that you will absolutely fall in love with Han Jin-soo's entire body of work. Mm. And even if you're not that much of a regular appreciator of fine art, if you have any interest in Korean culture and history, I assure you that you will find her work incredibly beautiful and inspiring. To be more specific, because her representations of everyday life in Korea were created mostly throughout the second half of the 20th century, a time when this country went through an extremely vast and fast process of political, economic, and cultural change, Han Jin-soo's oeuvre serves not only as a set of visually aesthetic paintings, but also as a powerful nonverbal anthropology of contemporary Korean history, including glimpses of the small but significant moments of life. For instance, children blowing balloons in front of an early version of Korean modern architecture.
Right.
And a group of young siblings enjoying the outdoors on a fine summer day in rural Korea, and a woman dressed in a traditional Korean bridal gown whose facial expression seems to show how an uncountable number of thoughts and emotions are going through her mind and soul on that big day.
Right, so quite different from her husband, but she has her own style, her own compelling story nonetheless as well.
Sure.
So let's move on to their daughter and granddaughter then, Chun Dong-ok and Kim Hyun-ji. What can you tell us about them?
Okay, well, Chang-woo, before we directly go to the two other women of the Fantastic Four, I say we first briefly talk about the exhibition I mentioned at the beginning of the segment.
Right.
The title of the show is La Voix, which means the voice, in case your French is as good as mine, which is pretty much as good as nothing. But once again, it's La Voix, or the voice in English, spelled L-A-V-O-I-X. The venue is the Bohemian Gallery, not Bohemian, It's Bohemian. It's actually a combination of four different Korean syllables, which kind of sound like Bohemian, right?
Mm.
So if you want to find it on the internet, this is how you do it. You insert a Y between the H and E of Bohemian and an H between the last two letters, A and N.
Okay.
All right? So it's Bohemian. All right.
Right. And we'll provide links on our social media just in case
absolutely.
That people aren't sure.
Find us on Instagram, sure. But at the Bohemian Gallery, this is at the very top of the very famous Gyeonggi-dan-gil in the Itaewon area. So it's at the top of the hill on your left. You cannot miss it. The show runs through the 31st. And this gallery has two floors, the ground floor and basement. The ground floor is where you can find the works of the first generation artists. Then when you go downstairs, boom. I mean, because the reason why I'm saying boom here in this particular context is that you take a look at the works of the second and third generation artists and you're like, wait, are they sure these are actually all artists in the same family?
Right.
There's a very, very significant difference,
okay.
Right? Mm. So let's talk about that just a little bit. Unlike her parents, Chun Dong-ok's selection of colors in a single work is significantly simpler. Not necessarily because she may not feel too comfortable with using more colors, but Chang-woo, in my opinion, because the simplicity does better justice to what she discusses with her abstract and surrealist works.
Mm.
The aesthetics of geometry itself and a voyage into the human unconscious. And what's remarkable here is that, after all, she's an abstract/surrealist painter, just like her father, but apparently in a rather different era of contemporary Korean art, hence the family resemblance between father and daughter, and generational gap in terms of artistic expression coexist.
Right, so you can see how the art has changed with the times, depending on the generation, you mean.
Sure.
Right? Mm.
But still, you have that father-daughter influence, if you will, right? And then, speaking of the coexistence of family resemblance and generational gap regarding artistic morphology, last but not least, the youngest of the four, the contemporary portrait painter Kim Hyun-ji. I gotta tell you, in a nutshell, her work is just absolutely punk rock. And I say this in a positive fashion, right? It's just so cool.
Mm.
And at the same time, and this is what tells you whether this artist is a great artist or not, it's sublime as well. To be punk rock, cool, and sublime at the same time, that's really something, right? So she has this vivid and candid representation of the vivid youth of her generation. And yet, if there's a significant family resemblance between her mother and grandfather, Kim Hyun-ji has a wonderful resemblance with her grandmother in terms of how they use various vivid colors to express the multiple facets of the human soul. The grandmother being a bit more post-impressionist, the granddaughter being a bit more expressionist. Hashtag express yourself.
Well, it's an absolutely fascinating exhibition that showcases a whole family's work.
Mm-hmm.
I think people will really get a lot of kick out of it if they do go visit.
Absolutely.
Once again, it's called La Voix. The Korean title is 그림과 그림자. And it's on view at the Bohemian Gallery in Seoul. That's all for Explore Korea this week. Jill, thank you for introducing us to this exhibition, and we'll see you again soon.
Absolutely.
Hello, this is Tiger JK of Drunken Tiger. You are now listening to Korea 24.
We've come now to our closing segment, Morning Edition Preview, where we take a look at some interesting features and reports coming out in tomorrow's newspapers, namely the Korea Times and the Korea Herald, who we thank for providing us with their early editions to make this segment possible. For that, we have our staff editor, Richard Larkin, joining us in the studio. Richard, hello. It's good to see you.
Hello. Good to see you, too.
Okay. So where are we headed to first?
So first, we will look at the Weekender section of the Korea Herald. An article by E.C. Jin takes a look at the port city of Busan, which has become the dream filming location for content creators. The Seven City has featured in many movies and TV shows, with more recent examples being the dramas My Name and DP, as well as the American superhero movie Black Panther in 2018.
Yeah, it's interesting. So why do they like Busan so much?
Well, according to the article, the city has become a beloved filming location for renowned movie and TV show directors due to its upscale luxury high-rise apartments, its vast natural landscapes, its panoramic seascapes, and finally, the unique Gyeongsang dialect.
Right. I guess it's also because it's different from Seoul, which everyone is much more familiar with nowadays. I believe we have some examples of popular locations in the city.
That's right, we do. First, there is the Haedong Yeongeungsa, which means Korean Red Dragon Palace Temple in English.
Mm.
It is different from most other temples that are located in the mountains, as it was built on the very edge of the seashore. The arguably most beautiful temple in the country was featured in the popular drama series Marriage Contract and Extracurricular, as well as the crime drama My Name. Visitors will first walk through a bamboo forest before arriving at the main entrance with two golden dragons on pillars. People will then have the option of walking down multiple paths, one to the temple itself and the other to an outdoor shrine dedicated to Buddha.
Yes, I have been there myself as well.
Me too.
It is absolutely stunning. Just by the seaside, the bamboo forest as well, as you walk in, it is incredible.
I took my mother there when she came to Korea one time and she loved every minute of it. And it was so perfect because the sky was blue and the weather was absolutely perfect.
Sure, well. Definitely a place to check out when you do go to Busan.
Definitely.
What about some other examples?
So another example is the Jagalji Market. According to the article, it is one of the best known fish markets in the country. Jagalji is a combination of two Korean words, jagal meaning pebbles and chi meaning place in the Busan dialect. The movie Black Panther actually created a set for one of its scenes by using the market as inspiration. Here visitors can walk through and see different types of fish and rare aquatic life displayed on the first floor. Shoppers are able to choose the fish they would like and then can either take it home or eat it on the second floor of the market. These are just two examples of famous places in the city that wow both Koreans and foreigners alike. So it is no wonder that Busan is one of the most popular and beloved filming locations for content creators.
I do also wonder if the city offers incentives for filming in Busan. That wouldn't surprise me. But yes, Busan becoming popular for TV shows and films. Let's move on to our next story. What do you have for us?
So next, in the entertainment and arts section of the Korea Times, an interview by Lee Kyu-ri discusses how German-born assistant professor Anna Yates Liu is looking to boost appreciation of South Korea's various traditional music genres, also known collectively as gugak. According to the article, the assistant professor of ethnomusicology at Seoul National University says gugak has more potential than most people think.
Yes, before we take a look at why the assistant professor wants to boost appreciation for Kruger, can you tell us a bit more about her? She sounds like an interesting figure.
Sure. The interview states that the 33-year-old professor earned her PhD at the University of London's School of Oriental and African Studies in Pansori. For people who don't know, this is a narrative musical genre performed by a vocalist and a drummer that the Cultural Heritage Administration recognizes as Intangible Cultural Heritage No. 5. She has also performed on stage and won first place at a European pansori competition called K-Vox Festival.
Interesting. Now, earlier this month, reports came out about how gugak is possibly being removed from a new curriculum for music education from elementary school all the way up to high school.
Right.
I understand the professor has a take on that situation as well.
She does. Yates Liu said she understands the problem as most school educators don't have training in gugak and yet they are supposed to teach it to the students. She added, however, that if traditional music is omitted from the curriculum entirely, nobody is likely going to do it.
Mm.
The professor also said that the education system is teaching children that gugak is hard and boring. She feels that the traditional music should be included so that kids can decide if they like it for themselves. Lastly, she explains that gugak can be used as source material to create new things, something that is different from the stuff that's already out there. For example, people often say how K-pop is different from pop around the world. This is because gugak is sometimes used as inspiration for songs, which then gives a unique feeling to the genre.
It's interesting. Perhaps sometimes outsiders, like the professor, show as well that there is more potential for the music and helps us perhaps once again look around and cherish gugak.
Exactly. And I think most recent examples being one of the BTS members using gurak and the style in his song might also help promote it and make it more interesting for the younger generation.
Sure. It sounds like she is a very interesting figure indeed. We'll wrap it up there for Morning Edition Preview. Thank you for bringing us those stories, Richard, and we will talk to you next time.
Thank you.
And that concludes our show for today. Tomorrow we are off for our regularly scheduled break on the last Friday of each month. Instead, we'll be airing a previous KBS World Radio special broadcast called Hello Monica, celebrating multiculturalism. We hope you can join us for that. Korea 24 will be back on Monday, so do tune in then for the latest news updates and analysis. Until then, we hope you enjoy the rest of your week. I've been your host, Kwon Jang-ho, and thank you as always for listening. Goodbye. KBS World Radio.